This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
And welcome back to the Neurodiverging Podcast. I'm Danielle Sullivan and I'm your host. I'm very happy to be here again with you today. Thanks for tuning in. Today we have a great interview lined up with Sam Young, who is a growth-minded, two-time Fulbright Scholar and the director of Young Scholars Academy, which is a strength-based, talent-focused virtual enrichment center that supports twice exceptional neurodivergent and gifted students and their families. Mr. Sam is a neurodivergent educator who has ADHD, and as an ADHD learner, he has a great understanding of experience in and respect for all things related to neurodiverse education. Today, I am so excited to be talking with him about his experience of the ADHD diagnosis, being diagnosed quite a couple of times from fourth grade on, and then how he came to the idea of using a strengths-based approach in education, which is something he and I share both in my coaching and in his educational practice. We're also talking about what does it mean to be twice exceptional, to be 2E, and what does it mean to be gifted, and how are those terms helpful and not helpful in the education space for our students, and then why school, the conventional public school system we have here in the U.S., may or may not match the needs of twice exceptional and gifted neurodivergent students. So this is a great conversation. I'm really excited to share it with you today. Before we dig into that, I just want to say, as always, thank you so much to my patrons. It has been a big year here at Neurodiverging. You may have noticed we have tried multiple new things this year. We have had group coaching, individual coaching. We've had webinars. We've had peer support groups. We've had our Get Stuff Done groups. All sorts of things debuted this year with the support, both the kind of spiritual, energetic support and the actual financial support of our patrons at Patreon. And I just want to say, now that we're coming towards the end of the year here, thank you so, so much for your support. It means everything. If you would like to support this podcast, if you find it helpful, please consider joining us at patreon.com/neurodiverging. And also, just before we let Sam introduce himself and dig on in, I want to let you know that Sam is hosting a free open house for the Young Scholars Academy today on the 8th at 6:30 Pacific time to see if that program might be a good match for your family. If you are interested, there is a link down below that you can check out. It's a free open house Sam will be there answering questions and just sharing about the program. You can also learn more about Sam and Young Scholars at youngscholaracademy.org. And without further ado, here's Sam. Welcome to the podcast, Sam. It's great to have you. How are you doing today?
I'm great, Danielle. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Of course. I'm glad you're here. You're the director of the Young Scholars Academy. And I know you work with a lot of 2E gifted neurodivergent kiddos. So I'm really excited to talk to you today because I think we have a lot of listeners who are really interested in sort of, I hesitate to say alternative education, but I'm going to say alternative education. Like we're homeschoolers, unschoolers. I think we talked about that a little bit. And I know a lot of listeners are thinking about how they can educate their kiddos out of conventional school systems or in ways in addition to conventional school systems. So we have lots of questions for you. Could we start by, would you be able to just tell us a little bit about kind of your path to directorship and what led you to this career?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess I'll do the elevator pitch here. So
yeah, go for it.
When I was younger, I was diagnosed in fourth grade with ADHD. And that was kind of a fork in the road for me, a moment that was sort of very defining for in my life, because I was really struggling and started to really kind of define who I was as a student. I had to, you know, go on and like get a tutor and do, you know, it was like the late 80s, early 90s. So phonics was big, right? Like,
oh yes. I remember the commercials.
Hooked on phonics, right?
Worked for me.
Doing all of that stuff. And it really started to like hurt who I was as a student. I developed a lot of like compensatory strategies to like overcome that. But I was really successful almost everywhere that didn't matter. You know? And was struggling in school. And so as I grew up, it was a major part of my identity. And as I got older, went into education, studied education, and then I found out about Twice Exceptionality. And I went to work at Bridges Academy for almost 10 years, mm-hmm. where I went to their graduate school. And I just kind of got like deeper and deeper and felt like I just belong here. Like this was like kind of taking care of like younger me and like making sure that other people don't have kind of the same types of struggles.
Yeah.
So I sort of developed this like strength-based, talent-focused perspective and have, you know, committed my life to that. And starting Young Scholars Academy was kind of like the big burning of the boats and send off.
Thank you. So what can I ask before we dig in a little bit more? I definitely want to talk about kind of your educational focus and training, but we've had a lot of folks who have been on past podcasts talk about how ADHD has affected them as kids, but I love gathering perspectives when I can, because everyone's experience is so different, like what their challenges were or where they really had strengths. What is your memory of kind of fourth grade Sam in school? Where were you struggling before the diagnosis? What could have helped you better? Where were your strengths at that time?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And it's one that came up several times for me. So diagnosed in fourth grade and then kind of got mixed information and then was maybe on the fence and didn't have ADHD and then was diagnosed again in high school and then again in college and then again in graduate school. So it was this kind of like teetering where I would, the truth of the matter is, right, that it's case dependent.
Yes.
Right, like that's the reality, right? Mm-hmm. That like in certain situations, I'm in a flow state. In certain situations, you can't get me to sit down. But I, in fourth grade, was in trouble a lot. I was at the teacher's, my desk was attached to the teacher's desk.
Oh my
and
gosh.
That kind of became the status quo, so that was a space for me to really, like, I just needed someone to kind of like keep a hand on me and keep me focused, because it was not stuff that I could really catch on to. I was like, I'd read a sentence and I would just see like, why are they saying like they're there twice? And I couldn't get the meaning of the text because I was caught up in the patterns.
Yeah.
Too many commas is too many commas. Or what's the difference between this a colon and that kind of colon? And it was like a superficial trend observation, which, really serves me well in life, right? Like seeing trends and spotting things. But at the time, it did not, right? It did not amount in that setting.
Yeah. Thank you. That's so helpful, because a lot of folks who are listening, I get so many emails that are like, I never really believed that I had ADHD. And then I heard this guest and their explanation. Like, so everybody's experience is so different, but also sometimes just hearing one person explain it in a way that you can understand really helps. So I really appreciate you sharing. I had a big emotional response when you were talking about recognizing trends and patterns, because that's a piece for me of where I got stuck in school, was also some of that, like, I can understand, the mechanics of something or the programming of something, but the underneath part, the part that you're supposed to be paying attention to, I had trouble with, and sort of in a different way, where I was very strong in English and lit and grammar and that kind of thing, but got stuck on, I guess I'll frame it as lower level math, like, but why is the parenthesis here instead of over here, or that kind of thing. So it's really interesting how those traits show up. Yeah.
And it's really tough, and as you said, like, there's something that we say with twice exceptional kids, which is like, once you've met a twice exceptional student, you've met a twice exceptional student, right? Like, and ADHD is like that too. And it's such a wide spectrum, and especially with complications around, miss and mixed diagnosis, right? Where someone may have like ASD presenting as ADHD, or might have hyperactive ADHD, or, there's so many different things. And also ADHD has become like such an adjective, or like, oh, I totally ADHD,
Yeah.
It's such a complex, really exciting space. But I think that the key, like, I don't know that I fully answered your question, so to do a better job of answering your question, I think it presents differently in everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the best things that we can do to, not identify, but like support students, is figure out like where's the breakdown, where are they struggling? And then is that transferable across all situations? And if not, why? Mm-hmm. Right. Because then we can start to ask, like, okay, what's going on there? Is there like a certain thing happening? Is it that it's the time of day? Is it the intensity or the speed of the content? You know, mm-hmm. is it the interest? Right. Is it passion? Yeah. So I think we start to like figure that stuff out. And for me, it was very much like, it was especially in English class, especially mm-hmm. when I had to read. But if you wanted me to like get a group together or take part in like a dialogue, I love that. And it could still be English class and it could still be about deep stuff. It was just mm-hmm. the way in which I was engaging and the way in which I was intaking the information.
Yeah. Yeah. No, and I think that's also really important. I'm also, we were opposite students because I'm autistic ADHD, but inattentive. And I did not want to do anything groups. My weaknesses, and still to this day, my weakness is really social groups, that I can't track everybody's gestures and behavior and eye and tone of voice all together. I can do one person at a time and it's fine. And people I know really well, it's fine. But if it's a bunch of like kind of classmates, where it's a sort of superficial knowing because you just all happen to be in the same English class, absolutely not, no chance. But I'm really good if you give me a worksheet and some chapters to read, and I just need to go do that. So it is, I think you're completely right. It really is about really look at where is the person doing really well and how can we use that to support them in other areas, right? At least that's how funny. I approach it. I'm not an educationally trained person, so.
Oh, I don't know that, look, I say this a lot, but I don't know that education training necessarily makes a huge difference mm-hmm. as someone who has like credentials in a bunch of different states. Yeah. You know, if you think that the system is functional and perfect, then great, you got credentialed by it, but I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm having a credential by a broken system is not mm-hmm. like the most, you know, validating thing.
Yeah.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah. No, it's really interesting stuff. So can we talk? Well, I have two questions. I'll leave it to you which order we go in, if whatever you think flows better. But one is, I would love to talk more about what 2E is and how it applies to neurodivergent people. And the other thing is, I would love to know sort of more about that gifted space. Like, what does gifted mean? How do we, like, what if somebody is gifted, what does that mean? And how do we use that information to teach our kids or to approach education ourselves?
These are really good questions. So
two big questions.
they're big ones, but I like that. So twice exceptional is it. Twice exceptional students, twice exceptional people are my favorite people. And the idea is that essentially this is a complex group, right? This is a group that merges two groups that often people don't think can even coexist, right? So the dual exceptionality is the idea is that someone, a twice exceptional person has an exceptional gift or mm-hmm. gifted area, and the G word's loaded, we'll get into that a little bit, but an exceptional gifted area or above average area, mm-hmm. and then they have an area in which they are struggling, and these are their dual exceptionalities. I kind of picture them as sort of asynchronous, mm-hmm. right? So someone might be really strong, like schoolhouse gifted, off the charts IQ, and they might have like autism, dyslexia, dysgraphia, ADHD, you name it, and that chasm between so their intellectual, strength in certain areas, and then the things that are maybe struggles or different differences. Mm-hmm. And that is the dual exceptional thing, but it gets complex, right? This is where it gets interesting because twice exceptional people are often in one of three categories, which has to do with masking, right? Mm-hmm. So a lot of the times we don't think of people with these dual existences because we only see one side, right? So mm-hmm. the concept is that there's these three kinds of masking. Number one is when that gifted area covers or conceals the struggle area, and so it kind of covers it up. The other one is the opposite, where mm-hmm. the struggle area covers the gift, so we don't see it, right? This is a mm-hmm. classic student who's like brilliant in a certain area maybe, but is in like a resource room.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe like if you get them in a metal shop, they're going mm-hmm. to like do better than the instructor, but because they're asked to do math every day in a way that's really boring and unengaging, then we don't see the giftedness, right? Mm-hmm. Think of like a Simone Biles or someone who's like a rock star on the gym mat, but had ADHD and struggled mm-hmm. in class, right?
Yeah.
And then there's the third category, which is students who have dual masking, which is the hardest group to support because they're the hardest to identify. It's when the gift can overshadow the challenge and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that that makes sense.
It does. It's really interesting too, because in the autism community, at least, and you know, to a piece in the ADHD community, especially among women, we talk about masking as being, do you look neurotypical or not? Right. So it's again, a term that has different definitions or significance across different areas. But so to me, when I hear masking, I think of, well, for example, myself, you know, in school, really pushing away from all those social areas, but really focusing on the academics. And so I just came off as sort of a nerdy, you know, highly focused on English sort of person. And that covered my social deficits until I hit about puberty. And that's when, at least for people born as women and living as women, the kind of clickiness and social bonding piece of being a teenager really kicks in. And I couldn't mask that, right? And so I started to fall over. But when I was younger, I just masked as somebody who was not autistic, basically, who could socialize as a neurotypical and function roughly as a neurotypical person. And so it's interesting to hear these sort of, I'd love to do a side by side of how all these different masks work together with one another or cover each other up. Because I could see as an autistic person, I'm going to be quiet in 1 minute, but I can see as an autistic person that masking of sort of social challenges, for example, in my example, being, you know, being highly gifted in English, for example, but also absolutely incapable and very weak when it came to sort of the social norms of, you know, when do I talk? When do I be quiet? When do I make eye contact? You know, how do I enter a conversation with a group? All those sorts of questions that I still really can't do, you know?
It's context dependent. I don't have ASD, nor do I pretend to, you know, tell it people with autism, you know, why they're doing the way that what they're doing. But, you know, we know that the research tells us that when students or when people, right, have a role in an assigned setting, that there is a lot more comfort there.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you as a, you know, a host may feel more comfortable because you understand the expectations around that role. It is not amorphous. It's not ambiguous. And it's confidence building because it can be a little bit more linear, right? And that's true. I mean, we can extrapolate that so much broader, right? That regardless of if it's, you know, ASD or ADHD or you name it, you know, people are often more comfortable when they understand the expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why a lot of our students like, you know, games and role playing and things, because they're like, okay, as a dungeon master, here's my job.
Right?
There's no ambiguity around this. Mm-hmm. But life is ambiguous, and that can be really scary and overwhelming for a lot of people.
Yeah. And there's also, I mean, I think a piece of it with the autistic masking versus 2E masking is that for certain groups like neurotypical people, say American, Northeastern American neurotypical people, that specific culture, they have expectations around social engagement. They're just unsaid or unspoken. And so neurotypical people, for the most part, not everybody, but for the most part, pick them up, right, without explicit teaching. Whereas autistic people, if we want to participate in those, have to be explicitly taught or have to go find other autistic people who don't care about us mimicking that specific culture appropriate or effectively. And so it is a different, I think, a connotation, but it shares some similarities, which I just think is really interesting. So let's get, I'm stuck on masking. Let me unstick us from masking and say, okay, so we have twice exceptional, having a great strength and a great weakness, perhaps. Just, can we talk now about giftedness? What does gifted mean? It is, as you said, a very, a word with a lot of connotations to it, some mm-hmm. positive, some negative. Yeah.
The D word is loaded, you know, because it has a dark history around it in many ways, right? That there's, you know, gifted testing and racial prejudice and gender profiling, and there's a lot that comes with it. So it definitely historically has had a negative connotation, right? There's thoughts sometimes around privilege and equity, but ultimately, much like twice exceptionality, much like everything that we've talked about, giftedness is a strength in a certain area. Historically, we think of giftedness as schoolhouse gifted, right? But that's only a piece of the pie. giftedness can be, you know, again, I know a very gifted high school dropout mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
He just speaks car.
Yeah.
He walks up to it and he like runs his finger along the side of the car. And then he just will touch one thing and a problem that has been plaguing someone for 6 months
mm-hmm.
is evaporated. Right.
Yeah.
And that's a gift.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, when we think about giftedness, we're talking about above average ability. And usually when you think of like your standard deviation,
mm-hmm.
we're thinking about two standard deviations. So like when you think of like a bell curve, we're looking at like two standard deviations over.
Okay.
And then beyond that, you get to what's called PG, which mm-hmm. is profoundly gifted, right? Mm-hmm. So this is very high, above a 135 IQ.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the times, though, I like to kind of break down the different, right? Because again, like twice exceptionality is my thing. So I think that there's a very likelihood, a great likelihood that a lot of people who identify or are seen as gifted may very well also be 2E. Mm-hmm. Again, it's just context dependent, right?
Yeah.
So are we seeing the two realities? Because as going back to the bell curve, like a lot of people sort of straddle both sides,
mm-hmm.
like especially twice exceptional people, they have this great asynchrony. And most of the time we see people in their strengths, right? I think this is a really important idea that like in school, we don't get that. Like we see people from the bottom up, mm-hmm. like, okay, so-and-so, little Johnny, little Susie, you're not doing your math or you're not completing your social studies. So like, let's fix that.
Yeah.
But in life, we say like, you're an incredibly talented painter. We have to get you doing, you know, album cover art.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I think that like school really needs to come over to the real world, because in the real world, we actually are tapping more into like strengths and talents and so forth. So this is a roundabout way to say that the giftedness, like everything else, is context dependent, but
mm-hmm.
that it typically this means an above average ability. And to quote Dr. Joseph Ranzulli, he goes beyond giftedness. This is one of my favorite. He's controversial, by the way, so I may be upsetting people by saying this, but Dr. Joseph Ranzulli talks about gifted behaviors,
mm-hmm.
not gifted people, right? Mm-hmm. That we have gifted behaviors, and that, you know, at certain times, in certain settings, with certain abilities, that we can kind of put this all together and demonstrate these gifted behaviors.
Okay, interesting. I'm not familiar with them, but I think folks could make their own determinations. And I'm sure there are books of his or articles of his that can be read right on the internet. So
yeah.
maybe I will find some links to put below for y'all. One really quick question is, you mentioned, I know this was not the main point of what you said, but you mentioned IQ as being a way that we assess for giftedness. Obviously IQ has a very weird and biased history. And I was just talking to somebody else about this earlier. Do you know, and I don't know the answer, are there other ways folks go about assessing giftedness or high strengths in or talents besides IQ tests? Or is there any movement by any of the community to like move away from that particular, or have people adjusted the IQ test since the last time I looked at it so that it is more inclusive? Are any of those things the case?
Yeah, no, these are, so I'm definitely not like a neuropsych. This is not mm-hmm. my strength. I find the whole thing very overwhelming, but there are so many different brands of tests, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the most popular is like the WISC. The okay. Wishler Intelligence. I can't remember what the whole acronym stands for, but there are like three big ones, and then there are more. We are seeing really gifted strength-based neuropsychs, neuropsychologists who mm-hmm. can look at a kid and say, you know, this is probably the best test for you. Let's also incorporate some kind of maybe portfolio work and other work so we can get like a more 360 view.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we are moving beyond just the like classic, you know, intelligence testing really started and really took off like in the beginning of the 20th century.
Yeah.
And we're getting kind of beyond those elementary ones, but we also haven't come that far. So that, yeah, IQ is definitely has been and still, I would say, remains pretty loaded. I just always encourage people to, again, think of like Howard Gardner's multiple intelligences.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, great, you're really gifted in this area and it shows on a test.
Yeah.
But what about the people who don't, right? Like, and going back to Joseph Ranzulli, he has this quote, which I adore. He says, no one cares about Pablo Picasso's math abilities or Albert Einstein's abilities to paint, mm-hmm. right? So it's like we can test someone in an area outside their, maybe their, where their gifted abilities show up. We're not doing them a service. So I think it's really important to, yes, do testing and get the data because it can be really helpful,
mm-hmm.
but also go beyond, you know, like a single assessment and try to get that, that bigger picture.
Thank you. That's really helpful. So I'm, you know, I'm a coach. I don't, I work with 2E people sometimes, but it's not our main focus at all, but strengths-based work is really important. And looking at where are you succeeding and how can we apply some of what you're doing in those pieces of your life to other places where you feel like you're not succeeding, right? Or how can we adjust approaches? And that really very much has to work with, you know, what are your gifts and talents? What are your strengths? And some folks, it's really easy just to know right away, like I can tell you're really strong about, say, pattern analysis, right? Just by talking to you, or you're very creative, right? But then some people, you really have to do a lot of work to figure out where that, there's always a talent, right? But you have to do a lot of work to find it sometimes because it's not being used in their everyday life. And so I'm glad to hear, I guess, that there are more than one, there is more than one assessment kind of technique or approach to figuring out how to educate folks with kind of very specific, unique talents. Because I feel like an IQ test is just not broad enough to capture most of those things. So
right. And a lot of the students will get, you know, one of the emerging elements is that there are just more pieces to it. So it might be a singular test, right? But then they'll also have, you know, observations from teachers and other people. So you start to get like a wider view. Again, it's challenging, right, to do this. Mm-hmm. And I don't pretend to understand how neuropsych evaluations work. But I know that, you know, the more information that we can get from the more stakeholders, I think the better we can serve our students, as long as we do keep what you're saying, as long as we keep that strength-based perspective, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of the times, these neuropsychs can actually give really helpful information, right? So mm-hmm. perhaps diagnosing someone and giving them an answer to questions they have, or a label to identify with, mm-hmm. As long as we keep that positive.
Yeah. Right?
And if it's harmful, it's like, you've got this thing. Oh boy. You know, and that's how a lot of people feel. I think they get these, you know, 35 page reports and it's like really dense. And I don't know that that is like serving people well.
Yeah.
So it's so important to get that like kind of wide smattering of data to help someone live their best life. And as you said, like leverage their strengths.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, in real life, right? Not just in the school setting, which is really geared towards learning very specific, discrete skills that may or may not be helpful later on in my own personal opinion. But then when you get into real life, being able to know your strengths and talents so you can apply them in a way that really makes life good for you, right? We want wellness. We want, at least as a coach, I want my folks to be like as happy as possible, but also as well as possible, which is hard to do. So can we pivot a little bit? I would love to talk more about your school. How do you, say you get a new student come in, can you tell us a little bit about what the approach is for figuring out what's the path for this person? How do we support them in what they need coming in?
So Young Scholars Academy's a virtual enrichment program. Like we're kind of like a virtual school without walls. And the idea is that it's strength-based learning and it's interest-based and students self-select.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't, I don't really have like a, you know, you come in, you take a test, you get placed. It's really about having students pick something that mm-hmm. excites them. And the goal is to buck the system.
Yeah.
You know, the goal is like, if you spend all day like in classes that you struggle with, and then you go see like a specialist because you're not doing something, and then you have like a tutor, and then there can be like an hour of cryptocurrency investing. You know, like that's going to be awesome. Right. And so our goal is to just take all these differently wired kids from all over that have really unique interests and just place them in a setting where they can like delve deeply into what they love with mm-hmm. mentor, quirky expert people above them. And then mm-hmm. like quirky people around them.
Yeah.
And so to answer your question, it's sort of a self-selection process.
Yeah.
And then we'll evaluate on the fly. Like if someone signs up for like advanced speech class and it's their first time, like hold on,
yeah,
you know, these students have been doing this for a year or more, so we need to maybe readjust. But beyond that, it's we're differentiating, we're meeting every student where they are.
That sounds very much like our unschooling program at home. Is like, what are you interested in? How can I help you find resources for them? My kids are very young, right? And so they're not quite accessing resources on their own yet, though they will be very soon. And so it is like, you know, how can I help you find the things that you're interested in and be able to engage in them? And if I need to translate like translate them up or down or help you adjust your level, right, than I will. But that's fantastic.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. And what age does your group serve?
So we have like four cohorts. Mm-hmm. So we have 7 to 10, 11 to 14, 15 to 18, and then we have 18 to 20 or 19, mm-hmm. 18 to 20.
Beautiful.
And those aren't always like the boundary. Some classes will be, mm-hmm. you know, across those, but generally it really comes down to like the educator's preferences for whatever mm-hmm. they think.
Yeah.
I really say that we're like a virtual village. Mm-hmm. So like all the mentors and educators in our program are sort of co-designing with me, and like they're really the experts. And then I just kind of facilitate the village so that they can like meet with the students. Cause mm-hmm. I think one of the things that our students need more than the content, more than the strength stuff, is really just like guidance,
mm-hmm.
you know, just knowing that things are going to be okay. And,
yeah.
and being with students who are right. Cause of the asynchronies, being with students who are like them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like humans are, I always say like we're social creatures who happen to think.
Yes.
Right. So, if we don't have that, and a lot of our students don't, right? Like mm-hmm. if you're operating at like a graduate school level intellectually, and then you're at like a seventh grade, you know, socially, emotionally, like mm-hmm. it's going to be hard to hang out with older students intellectually because of the social emotional stuff, mm-hmm. but it's hard to socialize with your peers because they're talking about like, you know,
Minecraft.
Pokemon, not World War yeah. World Losers, right? Mm-hmm. So, but you're into Pokemon because you're also that age, right? Like, so it's really confusing. So the idea is like just to give them a space where they can like nerd out with other students, and then also have these like quirky mentors who get them.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. Because I know, again, part of my job as a parent coach is working with parents of kiddos, and most of those kiddos are neurodivergent because I'm working with neurodivergent parents, and that's just how it is. And a lot of the complaint is that kiddo, you know, is maybe doing great in school, maybe gets on well with siblings or cousins, but like does not have friends because they can't find the one other autistic person in wherever middle,
yeah.
you know, nowhere they are. Because some of these folks are in cities. And obviously, the more people you have, the more neurodivergent people you have, the more likely you are to bump into them. Mm-hmm. But it can be really hard to make connections. And that's just with neurodivergence. I'm not even talking about like higher intellect, right? That it can be hard enough to find somebody with the same special interest as you, right? You're like totally. Your battleships or your Pokemon, right?
Yeah.
Much less, you know, somebody who's also on the same kind of level as you in terms of thinking through big problems. So that's really that I can see how that would be a huge benefit to the kids who are enrolled.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really exciting space. And we do have so many, like, I think of them as like marooned kids, mm-hmm. you know, and families for that matter. Like you're saying, we have families in several different countries. We have a student who is homeschooled and he's in Switzerland and his parents let him take like sometimes when there's a class that aligns with his strengths, like we have mm-hmm. a robotics one, which I already know is going to sign up for.
Yeah.
And like, he'll stay up at it's midnight
mm-hmm.
and he's taking the class from like midnight to one. And like his yeah. dad's like participating, mm-hmm. you know, because he's really excited and like, they're both, you know, fired up about it. And then they like built the day around it just so mm-hmm. he can have that, you know, hour a day or whatever it may be. And so it's really exciting to see. And it's like you said, there's just so many people who don't have that luxury.
Yeah. Do you ever feel like challenged by folks when they come in and they want the best for their kiddo and their kiddo's not doing well in conventional school settings for whatever reason, but also it can be a big, I'm speaking from my own experience, a big leap of faith to be like, okay, I'm going to let my kid lead. Like, I'm going to let them, you know, sign up for the stuff that's of interest and of value to them, even if it's not kind of how I was trained to teach my child, right? Yeah.
It absolutely is. And we have both. I mean, we have an executive function course
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it's really fun. Like, it's like gamified. They're building their own systems. Then they have to like test them and measure them and share mm-hmm. them each week. And, you know, I always say like, why are you here on the first day? And they're like, oh, my mom made me, you know, and I always know that. I'm like, that yeah. maybe we're going to have a blast. And then mm-hmm. they come back for level two, level three, level four, right? Because yeah. it's a great community. So they're like, I'm still existing in the same world, you know, that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Like, there are a lot of parents who are like, my kid isn't, and that's real life stuff.
Mm-hmm.
right? If a student is spending their whole entire lives consuming information and they're really fired up about it, but they're not necessarily building a vision beyond just the consumption, or they're mm-hmm. not, you know, contributing, I still do, this may be controversial, but I still do kind of barge in and say, what can we do, right? Yeah. Not that we need to like turn every hobby or interest into like a job, right? Mm-hmm. But how can we make the world a better place with your, you know, deep-seated knowledge? Like, we're just coming out of COVID, and there were people who dedicated their whole lives to studying like the Spanish flu, and then all of a sudden they're incredibly relevant superheroes mm-hmm. for us, right? So there's not always a clear purpose, but like, how are you getting your information out there? How are you mm-hmm. sharing it, no matter what it looks like? So yeah. To answer your question, I still do exist in that same world, but I also will say, just reminding parents, like, that school's converging to the mean, mm-hmm. right? That the stuff that you're hearing, the kind of reprogramming, does have to start with the parents, mm-hmm. right? That you're hearing all the time, your kid's not doing this, your kid's not doing that. And parents are like, holy cow, I want my kid to be okay. I want to make sure everything's going to be okay. I want to make sure we're going to have a bright future here. And that's not what the future looks like. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm a programmer, like, I'm speaking another language, I don't really need to know that much about this, you know, Spanish class. I'm learning this. Mm-hmm. And so if I have an F in Spanish, but I'm like on fire in programming, like, that's okay to me, mm-hmm. you know? So I think it starts with the parents, because we've all had an education and we all have an opinion about one. Right. Mm-hmm. And when we're constantly like being told, like, there's a hole in the boat over here, we're taking on water over there, it's like, ah. But when we focus on what we're doing well, we see transformations in our students, we see transformations in the work that they're producing. And as you said, we see the wellness, we see the happiness, and we see like the mind shift and grow, and the feel good start to come out.
Yeah. Thank you. That's really helpful. And people can absorb content throughout their life, right? And so for me, as a parent and sort of, you know, a de facto educator, the goal is to teach the skills so that they can access the ability to absorb content later, right? To teach skills so that they can effectively use the content they have and work creatively with it and question it and challenge it and sort of mold it around, make things mm-hmm. out of it, right? But I do think parents in a lot of conventional school settings are just constantly told, like, your kid is not learning this content, and that's the problem. When really for me, it's more about the skills around how to use that content that are more important. And maybe that's just the neurodivergent perspective, because a lot of us have lagging skills, or things we were not taught, or things that other people just pick up that we need to be explicitly taught. But I know it has helped my kids just to focus, for example, on executive function support. How do I manipulate this information, rather than absorbing just the content itself mm-hmm. of how do I solve this polynomial that I will never use again after what you test out of it in college, right? That's it. You'll never touch it again. It's like, okay, well, I spent like 2 years learning polynomials, so I could have learned, you know, meal planning or mm-hmm. how to do my laundry or mm-hmm. like something actually reflective of my adult day to day. So yeah.
A lot of our students do, as you say, like, our students do need to be taught things deliberately, and mm-hmm. they need to be involved, right? It's not top down, like, hey kid, take this agenda book and write down your homework, because that doesn't take into account their intellect. It doesn't take into account their strengths. Mm-hmm. So instead we can say, okay, what does task management look like, right? Yeah. There's really three things that need to happen. You need to capture ideas, you need to prioritize them, and you need to execute them. Mm-hmm. Now, what are the best ways to do part one, part two, part three in accordance with who you are?
Yeah.
And what have you tried? Mm-hmm. And, you know, then all of a sudden they're crafting something.
Yeah.
And that it is not a one size fits all. It's very personalized.
Yeah.
And it's fun.
Thanks so much for all of that. That was really, really helpful. For folks who are listening and who might be interested in all the stuff you do, could you tell us a little bit more about where to find more information about you and the program?
Yeah. So you can check us out at youngscholarsacademy.org. And the big news that I want to share is that we have, we're actually open for enrollment right now by the time this airs. When you're hearing this, from my mouth to your ears, this is it. We're open for enrollment, and our enrollment period is actually closing soon. So that's when you can sign up for courses, and the courses are going to be running. We have winter camps and also spring and winter courses. But the most important thing to take away from this is that tonight, Thursday, the 8th of December at 6:30 Pacific time, 9:30 Eastern, we have an open house where you can come meet all the mentors and meet different families and just go into breakout rooms and connect with families and mentors and just get insight into the different classes. So it's a really exciting time. And our early bird special ends tomorrow, the 9th. So we're giving like 10% off all courses that are signed up by then. So that's really cool.
Awesome. Okay, great. Well, thanks so much. Thank you so much for joining us on the Neurodiverging Podcast today. I hope that you learned something. I hope you enjoyed it. If you like this podcast, we have lots of other ones all about education, about neurodivergent students and how we need to access school in different ways on the website. You can find all of those at neurodiverging.com/podcast-index or wherever you stream your podcasts. They're all there. I very much hope they're helpful for you. We also run a monthly support group for neurodivergent parents. So if that describes you and you are interested in joining us, please go to neurodiverging.com and find out more information about how to get signed up for that. Thank you for being here with me. Please remember, we are all in this together.
Does your father know you're listening to this podcast? Well, when you're done, why don't you stop by and check out a show that is 100% dad-approved, Dadages. Hi there, I'm Chad Higley. If you're looking for useful insights and practical advice you can actually apply to work, family, education, philanthropy, and just life in general, check out Dadages. That's Dadages, wherever you listen to your podcasts.